All right, everyone, it's the Grimlord's Halloween corner, and unfortunately, this one's not very scary. Clo's game was a hell of a lot more scary than this, to be absolutely honest. Giant bugs, definitely not a fan of those. So, it got higher scores than Sound of Drop, which I really liked. The entire game of that should be already up. That's kind of my plan, to have the whole game up before this one starts going. And by the whole game, I mean, like, you know, the beginning, middle, and end of the entire first Himino Pass, which is a really good story. Everything's kind of self-contained. There's a little bit more that happens in the game afterwards, like there's an extended start to the game that really kind of makes sense as soon as you are introduced to that character. But after that, there's nothing in the second path. The third path has a lot of interesting shit that happens. Changes a lot of your perspective of certain characters. And I'm currently on the fourth path as we're doing this. Matter of fact, when I get done with this game, I'm going to be solo playing that fourth game that fourth path all the way to the end. And after that, I'll be done with it for good. And we'll be starting, again, Route Double. Now, this game got higher scores than that one, and it's also supposed to be kind of horror, thriller, you know, so we're just going to see if that happens, because I've heard the game is very slow, and we'll test that theory and see how that happens. But I'm wanting some action, and I'm sure you are too, so let's just keep going and see where we're taken. The sky is pitch black when closing time looms near, allowing all the fancy illuminations to light up the park. Me and Miharu take a rest on one of the benches near the entrance, since Mal and Naomi split off to buy us something they forgot to get earlier. Nothing but couples around here. Wanna sit somewhere else? Hardly surprising, since we're at a theme park on a holiday. Still, it feels awkward sitting around people who are openly flirting with each other. I try to get up so we can move elsewhere, but Miharu grabs onto my sleeve and stops me. No, let's stay here for a bit longer. I have been trying to do the saves just in case I screw something up. Okay then. Today's truly been a good day. It's not often you respond like that, after all. It's not often that you wear such a shy expression, either. She's normally a lot more outspoken, but something seems to be on her mind right now. Soon after, people start to gather around us to see the impending parade. Seems like we've picked a pretty good spot by coincidence, judging by the number of onlookers. The only issue is that it'll be hard to meet back up with Mal and Naomi if it gets more packed, so I try to move again. Miharu maintains a refusal to let go of my sleeve, though, and I fail to find the words to make her stop. The silence between us continues. This isn't normal. People tend to get the wrong impression about her, since she rarely talks to anyone other than us, but she actually has a great sense of humor. She enjoys talking about the most meaningless stuff, too. And yet, here we sit in utter silence. She's looking a bit shy, but there's determination in her expression as well, so I can't bring myself to say anything. The park staff sets up barricades near the bench during this time to make sure no one can get in the way of the parade before they start to organize people into lines. We could just stay seated, but doing so while the rest of the crowd waits around all excited feels too awkward. Hey, Rinka. We speak at the same time, possibly because we're thinking about the same thing. What is it? You go first. Right, you go first. Oh, I just wanted to say that today was fun. It really was.
Mao には
Want to stay and watch the parade? I'll send Mal a message if you do.
So stay good at it, or is she? Book a you inch in a good no more hasimete da she. You're any parade or middle no more hasimete nanda. Nakara, kill me, gardener.
I'd love to. This is the first time I've been to a theme park, so I was curious about the parade. I rarely go anywhere with my family, and I tend to stay in at night. That's so. Her only response to me is a smile. Back to awkward silence. The only difference is that she has a downcast expression now, which morphs into one of worry, but then that hint of determination returns. What I wanted to say earlier was, as soon as she starts, the people around us begin to cheer. Immediately after, all the park illuminations go dark, which signals the start of some lively music. Looks like the parade's starting. It sure is. The sheer amount of noise coming from the parade makes it impossible for us to talk while it's going on. Regardless, just seeing it is enough for me. It's one of those things you can just sit back and appreciate. The parade comes to an end about a half hour later. Part of me is still entranced, even after the park illuminations spark back on. Once most of the people who've come to see it move on, I tell Maharu that we should go too. She slowly loosens her grip on my sleeve before standing. That was very pretty. Yeah, it was. I'm glad we watched it. I hope this isn't the last time we all go out together like this. She says this with a dramatically different tone of voice. Don't worry, there'll be plenty more chances. Not like we're parting ways anytime soon. Right, thanks, Rinka. Hearing that is enough to keep me going. Next event is the fireworks display in August, I guess. I haven't talked to Mal about it yet, but let's all go to that. I make sure to emphasize that we should all go. Definitely. She replies with one clear, simple word. So clear, in fact, that it worries me a little. Normally, you wouldn't be so firm about planning a night out with friends. My phone vibrates. Mal has just sent me a message, and when I turn around upon reading it, both her and Naomi are walking towards us. Oh, here they come. Let's get going then. Miharu? Oh, sorry. I spaced out for a sec. Let's meet up with them. I wave the two of them over after she says that. The first thing I do when I get home is take a good shower. Today has been absolutely exhausting, so my body insists that I dive straight into bed afterwards. Today was fun. I'm not exactly rolling in money, so I couldn't buy much, but I did come home with something precious. I'm sure I don't need to say what it is either. My gran even gets back to me about relatively cheap and tasty beans, as well as a way for beginners to make decent drip coffee. School's back in session tomorrow as well, so I need to make sure I teach Naomi properly. Once I hop into bed, my eyes are drawn to a certain book on my bookshelf. I still haven't told Naomi about the cards inside. I should do that when she comes over to learn the coffee brewing technique. I turn my light off, ready to fall asleep. Yep, today really was fun. I find myself repeating the same thing I said a few moments ago. We're still a ways off from the fireworks display in August, but I'm already looking forward to it. There's no doubt we'll do plenty of other stuff before that, too. So I figure anyway, I still have no idea what is in store for me. I never even consider the possibility of my daily life being disrupted by something far beyond my imagination. Morning already? It doesn't feel like I've been asleep very long, but that might just be because I was so exhausted last night. Good evening, my lovely little slaves. Let me get that right. Good evening, my lovely little slaves to fate. Oh, you certainly took your time, numeral one. I am wrong. I haven't woken up. This is the same thing that's been happening to me these last few days. I'm still asleep and yet conscious for some reason. Slowly, but surely, I open my eyes. The sight that greets me is one that I could have never imagined. A number of gears float amidst infinite darkness. I gaze up and notice a faint ray of light piercing said darkness. Then it finally registers that I'm standing up, not lying down. I find myself on a circular platform about 3 meters in diameter. A witness stand like one you'd see in court is attached to the platform. I've only ever seen one in the news and on TV shows. Even more baffling is that this platform seems to be floating. It's attached to a much larger circle but floats independently of it. This is just one of 12 platforms by my count, all of which are arranged within a larger circular pattern like a clock's face. As if in support of this analogy, the platform on which I stand is labeled with a Roman numeral, I. In the center of these concentric circles are massive clock hands slowly ticking away. What the hell? Where is this? Why, of all people, are you here? I inhale sharply the moment I hear that voice. The platform beside me, which would be Roman numeral 2, has none other than Miharu standing on it. Excuse me. Oh. Excuse me, numeral 1? I suggest you refrain by calling her by name. Whoa. A voice I don't recognize stops me. I look in the direction from which it comes, only to see a small girl with white hair. Again, just marvel at the artwork on this game. Look at how the hair is drawn. That is really, really good. Just the details on the uniform and all that, the way the light shines off. Just really great attention to detail. Like, that's something you could hang on your wall. It's a really good piece. Huh? How are you walking on thin air? Unlike the rest of us, she isn't standing on a circular platform. She's walking around on nothing at all. She takes another step forward, stepping on the subsection attaching our platforms together. The hem of her skirt flutters up slightly, which reveals her slender thighs. Her hair is as fluffy as her clothes, the latter of which resembles the attire worn by a foreign noble. The hat nestled on her tiny head is kind of cute, too. Our eyes meet as we turn to face one another. You will address me as Parka, goddess of destiny and the supervisor of divine selection. In simpler terms, I am an existence far above you mortals. Wanna run that by me again? Ah, I see the shock caused by your death resulted in slightly stunted memory retention. I'm fairly certain that I explained things to you once already, but alas, allow me to repeat myself. Sorry, I guess, but I honestly have no idea what you're talking about. Could I not explain things faster if you kept your mouth shut tight? She sighs again, obviously unimpressed. Her attitude towards me, despite her being visibly younger, makes me want to keep interrupting her. So you were able to enjoy the past few days like normal simply because you forgot? In that case, you're best off listening to her, for your own sake. But... Let me rephrase that. Please listen to her. Right. Are you quite finished? If so, the rest of you may take this as an opportunity to refresh your own memories. She makes her way along a clock hand to the center of the clock face. She continues her explanation mid-step. Her tone is elegant as they come. All of you gathered here have found yourselves at the juncture of causality, and thus have been granted an opportunity to escape death. We call the process involved in affording this opportunity divine selection. As I stated before, my name is Parka, Goddess of Destiny. We have a mere 12 weeks, 11 when excluding tonight, to spend together, but I hope they prove fruitful nonetheless. She reaches the center of the clock by the time she finishes her self-introduction. She then stands tall, pinches her skirt, and bobs a curtsy to us before continuing her explanation. Under normal circumstances, all 12 of you would be gathered in one location at the exact same time 12 weeks from now, when divine selection ends. However, your lives all came to an end before that could occur. You were all in different locations, yet amusingly enough, your deaths occurred at the exact same moment in time. This occurrence is what we refer to as the juncture of causality. The juncture of causality, okay. Call it whatever you want, but I'm struggling to keep up. If that's what she's saying is true, then me and Miharu, not to mention the others here, were dead. That can't be right, though. I've been living my life normally until now. So, am I a ghost? That makes even less sense. Confused though I may be, I listen to what this girl has to say. Location is irrelevant during this occurrence as your individual consciousness transcends the mortal coil the moment you die. I'm sure you've all experienced something similar while alive. I believe dreaming is the term you use to refer to it. To that effect, let us refer to this as the dream world. This world has many facets. Not only does it serve as one of many parallel worlds, but it also acts as individual mental worlds, while simultaneously comprised of humanity's collective dormant consciousness, A world that theoretically does not exist, subsiding in a fragile state. Some work was required in order for you all to be cognizant of such a world. It is for that purpose I created the Court of Fate, where you all now stand. I take in my surroundings. No walls, no ceiling. Calling this place a court does feel fitting, considering how odd it is. Bestowing a name that which... Whoops. Bestowing a name upon that which does not exist is the simplest, most effective way to instill meaning. I do hope you keep that in mind. Cut the crap and let me put a name forward already. A man's voice cuts in as if to silence Parka. The voice originated from the platform to my right, emblazoned with a Roman numeral XII, which I believe is 12. The man standing there has brown skin. He's tall and muscular with a hardened face. I assume he's from the Middle East. Actually, wait a minute. Isn't it odd that both Parka and this guy can speak Japanese? Why didn't I realize that sooner? Everyone sounded so natural that the thought never crossed my mind. Nothing good comes from being impatient. I am about to mention the most important part. She gives a stern yet composed warning. Let us return to the topic at hand. Of the 12 present, only one would be able to realize the rest of their fate. The cause of your deaths have been temporarily silenced while divine selection proceeds, but this will be undone for all those eliminated during it. Not only that, but any event... Not only that, but any events in the real world caused by an eliminated member will also be undone during this period. It may be wise to consider yourself existences removed from the natural state of the world until divine selection has run its course. In other words, you cannot die by any means other than divine selection, although injuries and the like will occur as normal. I certainly hope this answers your silly questions, Numeral 1. She shoots me a sharp glance before she continues to speak. Much as I'd rather not, it's hard to feign ignorance after hearing her explain things this much. 12人が殺し合う. So all 12 of us are here to kill one another. You are 90% correct, my dear. No killing would go on here, however. How uncouth that would be. Instead, you will simply erase one another. One cannot kill that which is already dead, after all. Such an unpleasant description. Miharu and I aren't the only ones to react either. The others have their own thoughts to share on the matter too. Haruka's voice, along with all of ours, resounds throughout the court so we can hear each other speak. I don't have it in me to take a good look at all the others gathered. My eyes are glued to the person on platform 6. She sits in the fetal position, lifeless, almost as if asleep. I go back to focusing on Parka after that in an attempt to take my mind off the uneasiness welling up in me. I can decide whether or not to believe this after she finishes. Three cards are required in order to eliminate someone. Each of you have been dealt cards detailing a name, a cause of death, and a regret. These represent the past, present, and future, respectively. You all have... You all have a personal card with information regarding yourselves, so I'm sure you understand. Of course, divine selection requires its participants to have some manner of clue in order for it to proceed. So you've all been allocated three cards at random with information regarding your peers. What you need to do now is gather the remaining cards on your own. Obtaining information on the other participants is key, as this information will mold itself into the form of a card. Said information must be gathered in the real world. Follow the procedure, and you're certain to obtain additional cards without issue. The sole object that links this world with reality is the card book you were all appointed. Behold. I cast my eyes down as she mentions the book. What I initially thought was some kind of handrail is actually a book stand. Resting upon it is a single book. An auburn-colored cover with gold leaf gears decorating it. Huh? Why is this book here? I open it up, only to discover that it's identical to the one at Lion House. Whoa! A bright light pours out from it all of a sudden. I close my eyes on instinct and slowly open them again when I notice the light gradually fading away. What greets me now are four cards, one lined up beside another, floating above the book itself. 1. Name. Shishimai Rinka. Shishimai Rinka, or is it Shishimai Rinka? I think it's Shishimai Rinka. We're gonna go with Shishimai. Shishimai Rinka. Name. Federico Carminati. 4. Cause of death. Fire. Regret. Gold medal. Each card has its own details written on them. Only one card has my information on it, though. Maybe that's thanks to my memory being fuzzy? The other three have information on the others, so 4 total. I catch myself peeking over at Miharu, but I can't see anything due to the light pouring from her book. We're not allowed to know what cards other people have, not even how many. That explains the bright light stopping me from seeing anything. Miharu gives a concise explanation of her discovery. She must have noticed me looking over at her. She's trying to cheat already! Meanwhile, Parka pays us no mind, opting instead to continue her explanation.
¿Qué?
り振られた番号によって指名ができなくなることはありません。
The election order is decided after each participant decides what they wish to do. Keep in mind that the numbers you have been assigned will not prevent anyone from electing another. Should the person you elect opt to elect you in response, whoever reveals one personal card to the remaining participants earns election priority. She continues her explanation to proclaim that if both reveal a personal card, they are required to reveal another. If both parties reveal all three cards, a stalemate occurs, which results in all other participants receiving their information and running the risk of being elected, nothing more. We only have three pieces of information, so revealing just one is risky enough. Conversely, if you refuse to reveal a personal card, then you'll be eliminated. I've only got one personal card. What's up with that? Parka moves on before I can ask. Another point to stress is regarding successive elections. For example, if numeral 1 elects numeral 12, I say that's 12, and numeral 3 elects numeral 1, should numeral 1 succeed in eliminating numeral 12, then numeral 3 is given the opportunity to eliminate numeral 1. Once all have decided whether or not to elect someone, said elections will take place in chronological order based on your numeral. So concludes the basic rules governing the divine selection. However, noted a scenario can involve numeral 1 electing numeral 12 and numeral 12 elects numeral 3. Should numeral 1 succeed in eliminating numeral 12, numeral 3's election is null and void. In such a case where the procedure grows more complex, the order becomes fixed so as to ensure the maximum number of eliminations possible. Hearing her explain all that makes me realize the meaning behind these cards. I ended up dying at some point without realizing it, and now I'm being forced to take part in this ordeal. It's why I was given these cards. She calls it divine selection, but this whole thing, collecting cards and eliminating others, it's practically a game. A game with our futures at stake. Gathering information on complete strangers isn't an easy task, but so long as you can manage that, then... It's basically over should anyone gather all three pieces of information about you, right? That's just... There does seem to be a solid strategy where you can keep yourself safe. My eyes are fixed in Maharu after hearing her, as I hope she'll continue. It involves holding the three cards relevant to whoever elects you. You can use those to protect... You can use those to protect yourself, causing both you and the cards of whoever elected you to disappear, or so I assume. They won't be able to elect you after that, but you won't be able to elect them either. But if the one who elects you opts to reveal one of their personal cards in response, they cancel your defense. That's the gist of it, right? Indeed. I am glad at least one of you can recount the details. What happens if those two end up being the only remaining participants? We can cross that bridge if we ever reach it. She makes it clear that she has nothing else to add. I try to interject, but she ignores me. That's not all, though. There's a way to escape being eliminated even if you're elected, isn't there? A grin flashes against Parka's face in response. For example, if one participant is elected by two others at the same time, both have to fight for the right to elect them, as Parka said before. They'd have to reveal one personal card for that, right? Correct? Does the election get canceled if neither chooses to reveal a personal card? You certainly have your wits about you. Yes, that is correct. Maharu closes her book when she notices Parka is about to continue her explanation. I try to close mine, but it forces itself back open until the cards can make their way back inside. After they have, I can close it just fine. Seeing real objects behave like a smartphone app is a bit weird. Keep in mind that each individual can only make one election per night. The election itself begins once all participants have decided whether or not to take part. Should one participant obtain all three pieces of information with the revelation of another's personal card, they must wait until the next night to elect them. Looks like there's a proper procedure for all this. First, everyone has to decide if they want to elect someone, and once they've made that choice, the election itself begins. I can tell that the rules she's explaining are vital, so I try my best to keep up, despite my persistent confusion. There is a merit to eliminating another participant, I should note. In doing so, you have the right to take one of the cards they held. In exchange, though... This has gone on for far too long. The same voice that interrupted her earlier speaks out again. Don't, please! Please spare me, Bill. Shut up. You don't have the luxury of babbling on like this either, goddess. The man clearly has no sympathy for the woman pleading with him. In fact, he seems to feel nothing at all, much like Parka. Very well then, let us begin. Tonight's election should now take place. I can't recall much of what happens next. Once the man on platform 12 elects the woman on platform 6, they are both raised upwards and on and out of sight. Not long after, platform 12 descends with a man on it. I assume it means that he has all three of her cards and has succeeded in eliminating her. After he returns, I think he shows a card to Parka and claims it is the name of numeral 8. Having to say which card you take is probably what she would have explained if he hadn't interrupted her earlier. Which means everyone else gets to know the cards you claimed. Worry not, for this is all taking place as you sleep. Time flows differently from the real world here. Once you wake up, you will be greeted by the morning as normal. Tonight's session resulted in one elimination. I bid you all farewell for now. My conscious begins to fade when she says that. The sensation is similar to when you start falling asleep. My train of thought is completely stopped at that point, though. There's no way I can accept this. Not a single thing about it. The most accurate way to describe how I felt when I woke up this morning would probably be melancholic. Granted, I'm not even sure I slept in the first place. But what I am sure of is that certain things I've forgotten have come back to me. Wednesday, May 2nd, Naomi and I were on our way back to Lion House from school. We were trapped in a fire on the train at that time. That explained why fire is listed as the cause of my death. And it was no dream, it was reality. The fact that I couldn't stop shaking after remembering it lent credence to its veracity. Even if my mind had forgotten, my body certainly hadn't. The fire broke out so fast that I barely had time to react, although I remember a feeling of relief at knowing that Naomi was safe. As for how the fire happened, I'm not entirely sure. My body starts to quiver and I get headaches whenever I try to think back. However, I do recall a very specific bag and the keychain attached to it for some reason. It turns out that I did indeed meet Parka after my death too. Like she said last night, I had already heard her explanation once before. There's no doubt it happened in that odd dream world too. I guess I've got no choice for the time being but to believe last night's dream and piece my memories together. Ugh, I can't wrap my head around this at all. Much as I'd like to be able to, this is the best I can manage right now. Even if I accept that it wasn't just a dream, there's still way too much I don't understand. I couldn't find a single noteworthy incident when I checked the internet for any info about railway incidents on that date either. Parka did say that the cause of our deaths had been undone. In other words, the fire that killed me never happened once I became a participant in Divine Selection. That's the only explanation. The odd books perched up on my bookshelf like always. I wonder if this one and the one that appeared in the Court of Fate are the same book. If so, that means it makes its way between here and the dream world on its own. Whatever, there's no point in overthinking things for now. Still, 4 cards in the book, too. Wait, 4? That can't be right. Parka mentioned that we'd automatically obtain cards when we learned some accurate information. Something about giving thoughts a tangible form. The card detailing my cause of death isn't here for some reason. That's not all. Maharu turned out to be a participant as well, so she should have her own set of cards. I figured I would at least have the card with her full name since I know it, but I don't. I wonder if there are some other conditions you need to meet. That isn't the main issue regarding her, though. I've been trying to keep myself from thinking about it, but it's about time I face reality. Only one of us can make it through Divine Selection. That means either me or Mihara would need to be eliminated. That being said, I'd like to talk to her first. There's the tiniest chance that this might just be my imagination going wild. I eventually abandon my train of thought and get ready to go to school. I make toast for breakfast but end up shoving it in the fridge because I can't summon the will to eat anything. Morning, Rinny. Mal's already in the classroom by the time I arrive. Amica Girls University High School, otherwise known as Amica High. An apparently traditional school with facilities from kindergarten right up to college, it's co-ed through middle school, but at the high school level, all the boys have to go elsewhere. Wow, that is weird. People seem to have this image of it being one of those stereotypical all-girls Christian establishments, but it's not much different from the typical top-tier school. Yesterday was fun, wasn't it? Yeah, fun. I can't motivate myself to give a cheerful reply. What I saw last night refuses to leave my mind. Accepting the fact that I should be dead is proving to be a bit tricky. Hey now, where's your enthusiasm? Still tired from yesterday? Wouldn't be surprised considering how much we walked around. Yeah, I ended up falling asleep as soon as I got back. Probably why I woke up super early this morning too. That explained why you're here on time on a Monday. Whoa there, let's not imply that I'm always late on Mondays, even though it's true. Talking to Mal helps to cheer me up a bit. If it turns out that last night wasn't just my imagination, then I really don't know what to do about it. I'm probably better off just living life like usual, until I get the chance to speak with Miharu at least. Ironically enough, Miharu hasn't arrived by the time classes begin. In fact, she doesn't come to school at all. I've sent her a message, but it's listed as being unread. This following what happened last night causes me to panic. Fortunately, Mal has some calming news for me. Seems like Mal skipped out today because she was feeling sick. She said she's in good enough shape to go to work though. Huh? She replied to you? Yup, in a flash too. She never even read my message. That's weird. Maybe she missed it? I make an expression that screams, "You're so full of it," in response. She tries to avoid eye contact, but eventually gives in when I refuse to stop staring at her. Did something happen between you two yesterday? Huh? Yesterday? I can't help but repeat part of her question back at her. Don't tell me that Miharu's told her everything. You two were alone during the parade, right? A wave of relief washes over me when I hear that. She's only talking about the amusement park. In that case, I can't think of anything in particular. Mal seems legitimately concerned, though. I can tell that Miharu's got something on her mind. But what? Who knows? She wastes no time in reverting to feign ignorance. Yeah. Come on, don't keep me out of the loop. And here I was ready for something heavy, considering how rare it is to see Mal looking so serious. I could tell you, but here's the thing. You're the only one that can solve her problem. Why is that? So, see you later. Hey, wait! Mal ignores me and trots right out of the classroom. She's not in any clubs, so it's common for her to head straight home after school. In fact, she rarely stops by Lion House either, and I always get brushed off whenever I ask what she's been up to. Miharu. What's on her mind exactly? Thinking back to yesterday, she did look like she wanted to say something when we were alone. Considering the dream that followed, the two might be related. Which reminds me, Mal mentioned that Miharu would be going to work. I get what she's saying now. She really does care for her friends. There's just one issue, though. I find it hard to keep my concerns about where she works at bay. I know the name of the place and where it is, but it's kind of hard to stroll in there. I mean, it's a restaurant by definition, but it's a bit different from your standard fare. It'd be fine if Mal tagged along, but chances are she won't want to. After giving it some thought, I grab my phone and fire off a message. Do you come to places like this often? Nope, this is my first time. I was hoping to chat with Miharu since she works here, but... Miharu's workplace is a maid cafe located in Akihabara. That's right, Akihabara. It's a small, privately run establishment, so the staff just has to wear maid outfits. Meaning none of the usual business you see from bigger outlets, but it still takes some courage to stroll in. There's no way I could have done it on my own, which is why I brought Naomi along as my sacrifice of sorts. Unsurprisingly, all the customers are guys, which helps us to feel especially out of place. I'd appreciate if you learned to act a little more ladylike, Rinka. Miharu sounds beyond exhausted as she drops off my coffee. Sorry. Sorry, but I needed to talk with you, no matter what. You didn't read the message I sent, so I decided I'd best come by when Mal said you'd be at work. So it was her, huh? She messaged me this morning while I wasn't feeling too well, so I replied saying I should be able to make it to work. You messaged me this afternoon, didn't you? Yep, during lunch break. I forgot to charge my... I forgot to charge my phone last night, so I had to turn it off while I let it charge today. Now I'm upset that I missed an ever so elusive message from you. Oh, sorry. Here you go. With that, she places Naomi's warm and fuzzy cocoa in front of her. But she misses the coaster a little bit, which leads her to inadvertently slamming it down on the table. Naturally, this surprises some of the other customers, causing many of their gazes to turn our way. Eat! Dear me, I'm awfully sorry. Miharu turns to Naomi and delivers a polite bow. Naomi looks terrified despite being on the receiving end of an apology. Unlike Lionhouse... Unlike Lionhouse, this isn't a place where you can sit down and relax, unfortunately. I wish you would have figured as much based on the fact that it's a maid cafe. If you need to talk, then I'll pop by Lion House after my shift. Well, assuming you're fine with that, of course. Yeah, that's fine. Sorry for bugging you. But I gotta say, that maid outfit really suits you. Makes your natural good looks stand out even more. It suits me. Wow, I never thought I'd live to see the day you'd say that to me. Now you've gone and got me all embarrassed. Her face is bright red as she says that, a very uncommon occurrence. You'd imagine she's used to customers complimenting her, but I guess it's different when it's a classmate.
Mm-hmm. このバイトをしてよかったというものだよ。
I only chose this job because I could earn good money in exchange for acting nice to people, but after hearing that, I'd say it's been worth it. I'm not sure if you should say that out loud. Right when Naomi says that, the other customers burst out in laughter. Hehe, as you can see, that's just how I do things. Everyone else is fine with it. That's pretty cool. As much as I can appreciate how these places have unique work environments, I still don't really like being in one. Anyway, sit back and relax. She gives us her perfectly rehearsed work smile before moving on. I'm not too sure if my coming along was a good idea. Don't worry, I feel the same way. Figured there'd be some other girls here scouting out the cute outfits, but I figured wrong. That isn't quite what I meant. Ignoring Naomi's stuttering, I make an effort to start on my coffee. We finish up our drinks in a hurry and leave just as quickly. We get on the same train back as well, but have to split up at Shinjuku Station, my stop. Once it hits 9 p.m, I start preparations to close up shop. I open up pretty late today, so there weren't many customers. We used to get lots of people coming along for lunch when my grand ran the store, but I can't make much. It's no surprise that they'd stop coming. Even so, the fact that some people still come by because they enjoy being able to relax and chat here makes me happy. It's worth mentioning that my grand handles all business and financial decisions for Lion House, even while in the countryside. I put in the orders and such myself, but that's all based on her instructions after seeing each daily report. This is made possible thanks to the laptop she took with her. She's actually more tech literate than I am, despite her age. Around the time I finish cleaning up the store, someone makes their way through the door. Hearing that little bell jingle, I look over to see who it is.
Yeah, Minka.
Hey, you! It's Miharu, who has changed back into her school uniform. Just remembering her in that maid outfit nearly causes an involuntary grin. I don't mean that in a bad way. It looked a lot better on her than I imagined. Although I bet most things do, considering she's tall and stylish. In the end, it's her work outfit, so it'd be kind of rude of me to laugh. Hey, did work drag on? Yeah, sorry about that. The girl who was gonna follow my shift canceled out of nowhere, so I had to stay behind. Can't say I'm too impressed by whoever that was. It's still work, even if they're doing it part-time. It's one of those jobs where you get paid a lot of money for relatively easy work, so I'm not surprised. You won't find many of us working there actually trying to make a living off of it. Most of us are there just to make some money on the side. It carries extra weight when you of all people talk about someone's work ethic, though. The same applies to you. The majority of Miharu's wage goes straight to living expenses, thanks to her situation at home. She doesn't pay for a tuition either, thanks to a scholarship. I don't know the full story, but her parents got divorced, so it's just her and her mom at home, I think. What's worse, her mom isn't in the best condition, so she struggles to keep a consistent income. I might not be working for the money myself, but I can't really compare myself with Miharu when I've got my grand supporting me. Speaking of which, she mentioned once that most of the money she makes comes from real estate. She always brushes me off when I try to dig deeper into it. Anyway, you wanted to speak with me, right? Is it alright if I get my hopes up?
Okay.
You know exactly what it's about. This'll take a while, so grab a seat. I take my apron off and move to sit down with her. It won't take long at all, actually. She stops me before I can take my seat and then continues. I saw what unfolded in that dream world myself. There's no denying that both of us should be dead right now. It seems like you don't quite remember the details of how it happened, though. It came back to me afterwards. My memory's still jumbled up, but now I know that last night wasn't the first time I met that girl or goddess, whatever you want to call her. So that makes things simple then. We both have to make it through to the end. Or we both need to make it through to the end. Whatever. She says this with a radiant smile. How can you smile at a time like this? When I see her smile, I can't stop my gut feelings from taking over. I lose my self-control the moment she confirms the divine selection is real. Everything I've been holding back since waking up from the dream comes pouring out. It's simple. You wouldn't have had any doubts about wanting to survive if I wasn't a participant, correct? But the fact that I am means you can't summon those survival instincts now. The idea of doing so in exchange for my life pains you far too much. That's just the type of person you are. You don't need to worry about that, though. I'm fully prepared to give my life for you. Excuse me, what did you just say? Like I said, it's simple. If given the choice between either of our lives, I choose yours in a heartbeat. What the hell? Don't say that like it doesn't mean anything. Don't even joke about something like that. Sorry, I shouldn't have shouted. I break eye contact with her, giving myself a moment to regroup. Miharu replies by shaking her head while deciding on her next words. I say this with the utmost conviction. Besides, I think it's safe to say that every other participant is adamant on surviving too. Getting caught up in kindness spells certain death for you. How can you be so calm about all this? As much as I don't want to think about it, she has a cause of death on her own as well. She has a cause of death of her own as well, rather. She also died. That moment undoubtedly etched into her mind. Yeah. My own death shocked me so much that my brain tried to block it out, and yet she's here acting like it's no big deal. I don't understand how she does it. Because I'm doing this for your sake. I'm glad we got to talk about this. You really don't have it in you to take the initiative, huh? I'm best off not giving you information about me then. The last thing I want is more people going after you. Let's act normal at school too. You'll make it through this, so you can't let anything disrupt your day-to-day life. I need you to work with me as much as possible, though. Your death would spell my own inevitable elimination. She finishes her spiel before facing away from me. I'll do whatever it takes to protect you. I can't open my mouth, not after she's left my line of sight, not even after she's left my line of sight. I've forgotten to ask her about her own personal cards, as well as the reason behind me not obtaining any cards related to her. I make no progress for several days, so I wait for the second round of divine selection to come around. I start to teach Naomi how to brew coffee bit by bit while I continue to engage in the usual banter with Miharu and Mao. None of this helps to ease the tension in my heart, though. I can feel myself being pressured more and more by the reality that I've become a participant in divine selection again. There are people in this world who don't deserve to live, and I've never had any issue counting myself among them. I spent my life stealing and killing as part of the mafia in southern Italy. I got to where I am today through countless betrayals. I was never in the big leagues, but I managed to find success after success as a mafioso. Until, you know, I messed up when I shouldn't have and, well, died. Success wasn't imperative in the world I lived in. The key was to avoid failing because a single failure meant you'd be 6 feet under. And that's exactly what happened to me. It's funny though, turns out Lady Luck's impartial when it comes to whom she gives her blessing. Getting tossed into divine selection means I had the opportunity to live on despite my mistake. I've been given a new lease on life. I might not deserve to live, but that's irrelevant in the face of my desire to do so. So long as that desire is there, nothing else matters. That's the Federico Carminati way of life. I failed only once in my life, and I'm determined to keep it that way. I guess Lady Luck isn't the only one to pay me a visit, though. Her much less unfortunate sister has made sure to stop by, too. Oh, there's Odette. That's the muscular waifu I was talking about. We'll read this one real quick. Hey, Space Cadet, do you copy? This charming individual is Odette Malenkin. Or Malenkin, I don't know. It's probably Malenkin. Much like me, she's a participant in divine selection. Under normal circumstances, we should be aiming to eliminate each other, but we've agreed to help one another out for the time being. Well, I guess it'd be more accurate to say that she's forced me into a truce. Nothing much. Thinking about something. How about you focus on the grub instead? I ain't about to let good Chinese cooking go to waste, Capricorno. We use Capricorno as my code name when we're speaking. It's based on my zodiac sign. In turn, Vierge is how I refer to her. My only issue is that pronouncing French words is kind of tricky for an Italian like myself. Anyway, I'm the one that suggested using code names. I did that mainly because our names are valuable info when it comes to eliminating others in divine selection. Neither of us are supposed to know each other's real name. Knowing her, she's probably used some connections to pull my name out of the lake, but she won't tell me that straight up. Obviously, I know her real name as well, but I haven't told her. Keeping that stuff to ourselves is the reason why our current relationship works in the first place. Gotta admit, I couldn't be any happier that we're in Beijing. You ain't gonna find better Chinese grub anywhere. They served this stuff to the old emperors of the Qing Dynasty, so even the sauces are perfect. What's more, it's loaded with calories to combat the cold climate here. For a gal who lives on the sea, the perfect blend of taste and calories is just what I need. In fact, I'd argue that this Peking duck right here is probably the greatest thing to ever come out of China. Fats never tasted this good.
いい勝負なくらいの残酷な飼育法だが、こううまいんじゃ仕方ない。
The way it's made is just as horrible as what they do to geese while making foie gras, but it don't change the fact that it's delicious. Least the ducks can do is hope they ain't as tasty in their next life. She shovels more and more food into her mouth the second she quits yapping. This is her third plate of Peking duck, by the way. She's had plenty of gyoza and steamed buns in between, too. Hard to believe someone from France would order food like this, considering how particular they are about their full course meals. Just watching her pig out makes my stomach ache. Anyway, what I'm getting at here is that while French food's still the best, I ain't got no issue letting Chinese food play second fiddle. Now wait just a second. I don't mind what's second and beyond, but I'm not gonna let you imply that Italian food is anything but the best. Fine. Let's go find us a well-built Chinese person. Whoever wins in a fight between us three can say their country has the best food. Based! Okay, fine, you win. Well, you don't, but let's change topics before things escalate. She really would hunt for someone, too. Only problem is that it doesn't matter what kind of tank she recruits, she still beat both of us senseless. And many people can take her in a fist fight, men included. She's the head of a group teeming with tough seamen for a reason. How about it, Federico? Time for booze? The Shaoxing Zhu is pretty great. Tastes like dissolved candy. Give me a break, Oda. Oh! Just like that, she's baited me into saying her real name. I don't know what you were thinking about earlier, but how's about we quit wasting each other's time with this whole charade? What's that supposed to mean? I already know the answer, but I ask anyway. She chugs more Shaoxing Zhu before showing me a big toothy smile. I wonder. It's pretty obvious that everyone's first move in this divine selection game, or whatever, is going to be to get a death grip on the other participants' names. You wanted code names, but hey, it ain't going to stop anyone from finding out our real names. Cause of death too. We all died at the same time, so all it'll take is a bit of digging to find out how everyone kicked the bucket, especially when it involves people like us. You catch my drift, right? Yeah, no need to treat me like an idiot. I'm aware that information warfare is the name of the game here. Gotta find out one another's regret, too. The fact that you wanted to use code names in spite of that proves you're just a small fry. You should forget all about your real name. Everyone's regret card was handed out to other participants at random, right? That means one of them knows yours and one knows mine. Well, yeah, but there ain't no way someone's gonna luck out and get all three pieces of info on either of us when they're handed out at random. No one elected either of us during the first round, which serves as proof. Doesn't seem like that Indian guy has our cards either. If he did, then he would have gone straight for us, since he knows it's best to take out the toughest competition first. What would you have done if someone just so happened to get all your cards when they were first distributed? Nothing much. I just die knowing I lost my bet and curse my fate. About it. I really can't stand this woman sometimes. She makes you think she's got it all planned out, but she leaves the most crucial bits up to luck. Her cautious and rational actions end up getting thrown out the window when she goes wild for no discernible reason. Honestly don't know what goes on in her head. This is the first time I've come across a woman who doesn't just do whatever a man tells them to. The worst part of it all, though... Well, either way, we're working together till it's just us two. If you ain't up for it, then let me smack you around some more. That's what she does to resolve everything. She resorts to violence. I can't call her a nasty name out loud, so I just keep the insults to myself. Moving on, is there a reason why we're in China when we need to be in Japan for the final day of Divine Selection? Ain't it obvious? Much as I like Peking duck, I've never been able to eat it right here in Beijing before. You serious? We've got some homework to do out here as well. Huh? Right before our ship got attacked, I caught wind of a top brass executive for a Chinese food company collapsing during a meeting. As you might have guessed, Odette's the representative for a certain shipping company. Of course, we're talking about this woman, so ain't no way it's a plain old shipping company. Doesn't matter if it involves drugs or even dead bodies, they'll take any job they're paid to do. In that regard, you could call them smugglers. Their existence is kept in the dark, though. Luckily, because certain governments aren't shy about making use of them. Well, it's not quite accurate to say that they'll take up any job, considering Odette makes it a point to turn down anything she considers boring. Certain circumstances led to my hitching a ride on her boat, which is how we ended up cooperating in the first place. I went to look up more info on it after we'd been brought back, but turns out there wasn't any record of the incident at all. Hold on, doesn't that mean? I can't even take the bite of food in front of my mouth when she says that. Okay. Yeah, I'm not crazy about that sentence. She, on the other hand, grabs a bottle of Shaoxingzhu and downs what's left in it. I gotta keep tabs on this sort of info thanks to my line of work, so I ain't gonna forget about something like that easily. His name's Ro Chano. I dug deeper after that, and here's the kicker. He seems to be alive and well. What? The moment she mentions his name, the book beside her emits a strange light. It's a big, thick, auburn-colored book with some gold leaf decorations on it. But there ain't no pages in it, just a big hole in the middle when you open it. It's got the exact same book, see? It's some kind of card-storing book used for divine selection. Now we're talking. The dull light focuses into a single point once she opens her book. It gradually fades and then its place is a rectangular piece of paper. Odette catches it while it's hovering in midair.
Bingo!
Looks like our friend Rochano is numeral 7. Damn, that was easy. The girl was going on about being a goddess, mentioned that the cause of all our deaths had been undone. The fact that Odette was able to notice such a paradox proves that the girl wasn't lying. Now we gotta play the guessing game. He was a fatso, so he might have had diabetes. Oh, yep. Sorry, YouTube. I just completely lost all my... Yep. Gonna just lose everything right there, right? Use the word fatso. Oh, how dare you! Well, I mean, it happens, but hopefully the channel is still here after you saw this, you know? All it takes is one of those community guidelines people to see the, hear the word fatso. Oh my god, that's a horrible word against a person that's overweight. Well, you know what I was saying about Sakai Project and how they were making their scripts progressive? I don't know anymore. You used the word, I remember back in the day, they used to say like in old shows, "Hey, fatso!" And it'd be like, I don't know if we can do that anymore. I think that's part of the communist restructuring here. Anyway, yeah, some people are fat, you know. Hey, how you doing, fatso? And it's like, well, at least don't call me late for dinner.
Let's see.
Which means he could have died from low blood sugar. Then again, I can't see a bigwig like him not taking the proper precautions. So if something killed him unexpectedly, then it more than likely have been a stroke or a heart attack. No love from the cards, huh? She calls it a guessing game, but she clearly isn't taking stabs in the dark. Does the fact that a card didn't appear mean she's not on the right track? Maybe there's some kind of condition that causes the cards to appear. How come Rose's name card never appeared before, even though I'd learned about him earlier? Hell if I know. Guess you gotta think a little harder if you're that unsure. How about you help me out here? Wait a minute. I thought up a few other possibilities just now, but I wasn't sure whether they were right or not. You sure love talking to yourself. My attempt to tease her falls on deaf ears. The grin that spreads across her face soon after bursts with confidence. Between a stroke and a heart attack, I bet that he suffered the former. Wouldn't be surprising if his diabetes caused him to have one out of the blue during his meeting. How's that sound? She directs her question toward the book, as if it nods back. Amazingly enough, it does respond. It reacts the same way as when she obtained Rose's name card. Numeral 7's cause of death was a stroke. Things went well this time, but it seems one of the rules is that you gotta believe in your answer to make a card appear. Can't expect results from blind guessing, even though it all seems kind of ambiguous. Gotta believe in it, huh? I should mention that Odette went through the entire process while she continued to chow down on her food. I'd plan on going easy on the booze so I could stay rational, but I ended up downing my drink as well. I figured that being stuck with her is a bad thing, but on the other hand, it might be perfect for me. This woman is gonna be useful. It's not often that you find someone who's got brains to match the brawn, so I should be able to get rid of anyone in my way with her around. Why would she cooperate with me, though? Maybe she figures I have all the info I need on her, so she's doing this to make sure I don't hand anything off to the other participants. We were on the same boat when it sank, so naturally you'd think we both died in the same way. And since I've got her name and cause of death, she wants to keep me in check. What she doesn't know is that I don't actually know her cause of death. She shouldn't know mine either. We might have died when the ship was attacked, but the actual causes weren't by drowning or from fire. In reality, the only info we have on each other is our names. Odette's just making it seem like she knows more so she can have leverage on me. Basically, this whole cooperation thing is a front so that she can get her hands on my info when we're the last two remaining. Heh, now that's the kind of chowing down I like to see. Bring us the best wine you've got. Yeah, count me in. The most important challenge of my life is about to begin. I ain't about to fail, and I certainly ain't gonna let her drink me under the table. We end up drinking till all the wine in the restaurant is gone. Amazingly enough, she pops open another bottle back at the hotel as a substitute for water. I'm not about to join her, so I go back to my room and sleep. I don't know, man. You might be missing something. Hell, she'll bench press him. The next morning, I notice that I have Rose Card in my own book, too. Alright, so, I think that's a good place for us to stop. It's kind of getting more into, like, crime and mystery, intrigue, not so much horror. Maybe that's not the way they wanted to go with this one. And, maybe that means it's not really good for the horror, the Halloween show. But, we are playing it, so we will continue to play it. I like it, and I think a lot of you guys might like it where it's going now. I mean, things didn't start to get interesting for me until, basically, Federico and Odette got into the game. And, yeah, I like the muscle girls. A lot of people know that. But besides that, like, her personality is good, and I like, you know, how they're basically trying to put in this mob and crime intrigue in there. Like, you're talking about the guy that died of a heart attack, stroke, and then automatically picked out the card like that. And basically, they're going to be able to win and get that guy. You probably never see him in a game, which is fine. I mean, he's probably not going to be that interesting of a character anyway if he was in the game. Some fat business owner that died of a stroke probably doesn't make for a very good, character. I mean, I don't know if we'll see this person. But, hey, it's a 25-hour game. That's complete. That's all the paths. I don't know how long one path is. But so far, I do like what I'm playing. It's not so boring. God, dude was trying to tell me it was boring. And it was boring to hear the rules of the game. Like, Goddess went on forever. I gotta agree with the Indian guy. Goddess didn't shut the fuck up. And finally she shut... I mean, the Indian guy was finally the one that said, hey, you know what? Shut the fuck up. That's enough. And she's like, okay, very well. We're done. And then they could get on with it. And then they had the little... touching thing, like, oh, I'll give my life for you and all that kind of stuff. Alright, good. But now things are starting to get kind of interesting. Now it's picking up. You got this mafia guy and this woman here, and things are gonna get kind of neat now. I mean, I like that I'm actually getting things from their side, not just the girl. Waifus are okay, but sometimes you like to get into a more adult kind of situation, and that's what they're talking about here, because these are both adult characters. And, of course, I am an adult. I'm in my 30s. So, high school, it gets old, folks. High school gets kind of old. I like some adult stories. So I definitely will play more of those too, because there are definitely more adult stories. And I like adult characters in these games a lot more too, like adult waifus, obviously Odette. Definitely hope that they have more CGs of her, because yeah, I like that character. Anyway, the game is called Fatal 12. It's available on Steam and GOG. You can pick it up. Shouldn't be that much money. I don't know if they're having a sale or what. But, pick it up if you like it. If you like what you're seeing here. And this will be the Grim Lord. And I am out of here. Later.